The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticize. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. And on today's instalment, I'm talking to you, originally recorded and broadcast on Wednesday, July the 1st, 2026, at achshow.com. I will be presenting a show entitled The Baby of Macron. And the time is 9:04 a.m. over here in London, England, and it is nice to be talking to you again. Now, for those of you who listened to Monday's show, you will remember that I wasn't planning to be back until Tuesday with Dr. Peter Hammond next week. But when you are a truth seeker and a Christian, sometimes things happen and you get your main motivation is to get the truth out there. And that is why I am back earlier than I planned. And I think also we all like surprises, don't we? Most of the time. And I hope that this is a nice surprise for you. Okay, so today's show title, The Baby of Macron, relates to a couple of things. Firstly, the 1993 Peter Greenaway film, The Baby of Macron, that I'll be getting into later. And secondly, the Google AI overview I got when I typed this into Google. Are Emmanuel Macron's stepchildren older than him? And this is how Google AI responded. Yes, French President Emmanuel Macron is younger than all three of his stepchildren. His wife, Brigitte, is 25 years older than him. Consequently, her children from a previous marriage are older than Macron, making him technically the youngest member of his immediate family. The children are Sebastian Auxerre, born in 1975. He is the oldest, roughly 2 years older than Macron. Laurence Auxerre Jourdan, born in 1977. She is close in age and was a high school classmate of Macron's. And Tiphaine Auxerre, born in 1984. She is the youngest of the three. Hang on. If Tiphaine Auxerre was born in 1984, that would make her younger than Macron, which contradicts the first line of the Google AI overview that I repeat stated, yes, French President Emmanuel Macron is younger than all three of his stepchildren. So for those of you who are worried that AI has become sentient, I wouldn't worry too much because even I worked that one out. Okay, so here's what I've got to talk about since Monday's show. So first up, we're going to go to the browser. And I have, you remember I covered the appointment of Andy Burnham's chief of staff, who is James Purnell, and how both the what we're told is the leading right-wing publication, the Daily Mail, and what we're told is the leading left-wing publication, the Guardian, here in the UK. How both of them seem to give a rundown of his career through Parliament and then his job at the BBC afterwards, followed by his stint at Flint Global. But both of them failed to mention that he was the chairperson of parliamentary lobby group Labour Friends of Israel, LFI, for 2 years. The only publication that came up that gave me that information is called the Canary.co, which ran an article on the 24th of June 2026, headline, Burnham appoints ex-Labour Friends of Israel chair as chief of staff. Well, get this. I found an article Yesterday, the game TheCanary.co, headline, this is dated 30th of June, 6 days after the article I just mentioned. Headline, breaking, Canary debanked by Lloyds. The Canary has been debanked by Lloyds. Despite banking with them for almost a decade, they are currently withholding a substantial amount of our money. We are left with barely any funds. Lloyds has not explained why it has taken this action. Despite multiple communications from us, the bank has not been forthcoming with its reasoning. The Canary is now in a financially precarious situation. We do not know when our money that Lloyds is holding will be returned. Moreover, we do not know how it will affect our ability to get another bank account in the future. Lloyds give no explanation, subheading. We do know that multiple other politically engaged people have suffered similar actions by other banks in recent times. It is not lost on us that powerful banks are able to restrict the financial activity of anti-Zionist and pro-Palestine organisations and individuals. Whilst we do not currently know the reasons behind our debanking, we cannot afford to be naive about this. It is an outrage that the Canary has been unceremoniously dropped into financial instability with no notice or explanation from Lloyds. Subheading, independent media targeted. Our situation is a damning indictment of the treatment of independent media in this country, whereby you can be potentially ruined without recourse by banking giants like Lloyds. At this moment, we do not have enough cash to pay all our staff again because Lloyds is holding so much of our money. Our situation highlights just how at risk independent media is at all times. We need your support constantly, but we also need it now more than ever. If you can donate to keep the Canary afloat while we resolve our debanking crisis, then you can do so here. And that's got an underline button, so presumably that is a link. It is where you can make a donation. Now, I remember when people were being debanked on the right, the many people on the left were laughing gleefully of how good that was. Now, I'm not saying that the Canary was one of those organisations that said that, but free speech is free speech. And if you're on the opposing side of someone's free speech, you either support free speech or you don't. And I always go back to that left argument of, I disagree with what you say, but I would fight to the death to defend it. Something like that, you know what I mean. And then I've pointed out how since the left have gained more control, then censorship has gone up. So censorship is not good for anybody. But one line that struck me in this article was under the subheading, Lloyds give no explanation. I'll repeat the first line. We do know that multiple other politically engaged people have suffered similar actions by other banks in recent times. Well, this is June. This article was at the end of June 2026, yesterday in fact, is the date of the article. So does recent times include 18 years ago, back in 2008? Because when I saw what was going on here, it reminded me of this entry in my book, The Synagogue of Satan Updated and Expanded and Uncensored, which is now out of print. The first entry from 2008. On October the 8th, 2008, Lloyds Bank writes to the Islamic Bank of Britain, instructing it to cease all its dealings with the British charity Interpal, which has been operating since 1994 to provide relief to children orphaned by Israeli aggression in Palestine. After numerous letters of complaint, Lloyds tries to do a damage limitation exercise, stating that they were devoted to Islamic causes and they would never force another bank to cease dealing with Interpal. Unfortunately, the letter from Lloyds has already been posted in the Interpal website and it reads as follows. We are writing to you to give you notice that from the date falling on the 60th calendar day, following the date of this letter, we do not wish you to transfer, receive, process or in any way deal with any funds or in any way whatsoever, acting either as banker or agent on behalf of the customer, be involved with any type of banking arrangements for Interpal, which either uses or involves any products or services provided by us. Furthermore, we will not process any payments or credits or allow the completion description of any transaction that we believe is or connected with Interpal. By signing and returning a copy of this letter, you agree and undertake with us that you will, to the fullest extent possible, ensure that Interpal will not, nor will you, on behalf of Interpal, use any products or services provided to you by us. Interestingly, the Lloyd's chairman is one Sir Victor Blank, who, according to the Jewish Chronicle, in an article entitled How Jewish is Sir Victor Blank? Sir Victor is a former chair of UJS Hillel. He is also involved with Labour Friends of Israel, is a governor of Tel Aviv University, and has also been brought on to the Jewish Leadership Council, meaning he is both Jewish and a leader. Plus his professions, he is a qualified lawyer and works as a banker, are as hamish as they come. Yes, Sir Victor is one Jewish hombre. So, there you go. Okay, let's move on to the next article I have, which is Scourge of the E-Bikes at Wimbledon. This is a Daily Mail article. Council threatens to seize abandoned bicycles after hundreds of fans use them to join the queue. Now, Wimbledon tennis has just started, I believe, on Monday. And there's always a certain amount of tickets they hold back that people can queue up on the day. But as I found out by reading into this, you can no longer queue up on the day because people will queue up a night or even the day before, early on, what have you, because people get in the queues earlier and earlier these days, because of course we've got more and more people in this country, which is why we've got less and less hospitals, things like that. That's how it all works out. It seems a bit odd to me, but the people in control assure us that this is exactly how things should be working. So anyway, they're moaning about e-bikes, because what's happened is you can pick up an e-bike, I believe, anywhere in London, and you pay for it or what have you, and you ride it, and then you leave it wherever you leave it. And consequently, people are all going one way to Wimbledon and getting in the queue, and all these bikes are everywhere, so it's caused a bit of a problem. Again, I blame the Olympics. I forget which year it was. I don't think it was the 2012 London Olympics. I believe it was the one before, in which a load of the United Kingdom team, I believe it's United Kingdom in the Olympics rather than England, but they did very well in the cycling events. And after that, because people in this country struggle, a lot of them, to actually think for themselves, and suddenly they see all these people winning for the UK team in cycling. And so we had this massive increase in interest in cycling in this country. It never crossed their minds to get on a bike while before Britain did well, or the UK did well at that Olympics. But afterwards, they were just all over the roads. And I used to ride a bicycle. I rode it to school, and then I started riding it to college, and I stopped riding it when I learned to drive and I had a car, because if you can drive a car, I don't know why you should be riding a bike on the road. I mean, for me, if I had a queue of people behind me on a bike that were being held up by me, I'd be embarrassed. But obviously a lot of people don't think that way in this country anymore. It's very much me, 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 me all the time, not concerned about the feelings of others. That's my main reason for being against cycling. But I think that another reason that it's been brought back is that Andy Burnham's been talking about devolution. And what he means is allowing areas such as Wales and Scotland and the north of England to determine their own policies, what have you. There are not everything run from London. But I argue that the devolution that we're going through is we're essentially devolving. We are going from being an advanced society into a backward one. So the main reason they want to get cars and things like that off the roads and they're building cycle lanes is they want us to send us back to the Stone Age. Okay, they want us to go back to when we didn't have these things. They don't want us having any luxuries. They want the idea of a good meal now being a luxury. You know, whereas a good meal was something that was normal, and then you had your meal, which is, you know, what everyone normally does, that's a good meal, and then they might go out to do something exciting. That's just a normal part of life. But they're trying to make it that things that we would accept as the norm are now some sort of luxury. That's the way I see things going. Let's see what else I've got here. Would help if I'm in the right area. Oh, here we go. What did I just say? Hammersmith is another Daily Mail headline. Hammersmith Bridge will never reopen to cars, council says, after spending £3 million turning ailing structure into eco-friendly cycle paths. So we're always told that we're so much better than we were in the past. But you see, in the past, you could drive across Hammersmith Bridge, not just in a car, you could drive across in a bus, you could drive across in trucks, all sorts of things. I don't believe there was any weight restriction that I'm aware of. But now, you can only drive past on a bicycle. Where does this lead, do you think? Do you think we're going to have more places that you can only access by bicycle so that they can get this agenda in, which is dressed up as a green agenda, but actually it means that nations are being forced into not acting like the advanced nations that they once were because of a load of things that when documentaries such as the great global warming swindle come out, they spend a fortune trying to debunk everything that's said in there. Why are they so keen to hold on to this thing? You know, for me, it can only be like most of the things that the powers that should not be are involved in, and that is anything that can be used to our detriment. That's the way that I've certainly experienced life in this country. Yeah, The Great Global Warming Swindle was a documentary, very well worth seeing. And it's funny because when you look at the aftermath of what happened there, you sort of can draw your own conclusions as to anyone that got told to change their mind. Was that because they discovered new research, or were they under some sort of duress? I'll leave you to work that one out. Okay, I think that's all the articles that I had. So let's go over to what I've got written up here. And that is the Something For You To Listen To section of the show, in which I tell you about a song you can listen to via the YouTube link in the post for this show, which you can find at achshow.com. Today's song is Loose by The Stooges, which was originally released on their 1970 album entitled Funhouse, that has been regularly referred to in the music press as the greatest rock and roll album of all time. And even a couple of my favourite artists, Nick Cave and Marky Smith, have cited The Stooges' Funhouse as a favourite album, whether it is or isn't the GOAT, one of our more annoying present-day acronyms, is a decision that can only be made by the listener. But for me, even if it isn't, it is definitely a leading contender. I'm sure I read somewhere that it was Nick Cave's favourite album, but then I think he said that Bob Dylan's Slow Train Coming was his favourite album, and they're about as opposite as you can get, but Slow Train Coming is another great record. All right. I'm hoping that little drink of water will last me through this lengthy film review. And today's film review takes us back to today's show title, The Baby of Macron, or rather, the 1993 Peter Greenaway film entitled The Baby of Macron. Being as the 1989 Peter Greenaway film The Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover is, in my opinion, one of the best films ever made, I investigated some of his other films on Wikipedia, and I haven't found one that particularly interested me. Indeed, the plot section of the Wikipedia page on 1993's The Baby of Macon positively disgusted me, and to see what you think, I'm going to read it to you now. Here we go. In the mid 17th century, the court of Cosimo III de' Medici, Grand Duke of Tuscany, gather to watch a play. The town of Macon is plagued with a curse that has made every woman barren and brought famine to the land. A woman is in labour, signifying the first birth in many years, which the midwives initially believe is a false labour due to the mother's advanced years and general ugliness. However, she does give birth to a healthy baby boy. Her husband, the father, immediately seeks to profit by selling potions to cure impotence. However, the elder daughter of the couple is taken with the child and sees potential to use him to make herself rich. Years later, the daughter successfully passes the child off as her own, claiming him as a virgin birth to protect her own virtue. Various precious gifts are given to the baby of Macon, and a cult develops around him. The daughter sells the child's blessings of fertility in exchange for livestock and riches. She keeps the mother and the father imprisoned, along with the child's wet nurse and a young girl chosen by her father, and a young girl chosen by her to be her father's sexual slave. The bishop, sensing a threat, considers the daughter blasphemous, and the bishop's son believes that either she is a virgin and the child is not hers, or the child is hers, in which case the daughter is a whore. Frustrated, the daughter uncages her parents to show the bishop's son she is still a virgin, but he refuses to believe her mother is the mother of the child. The daughter then takes the bishop's son to the farm, where she keeps her livestock and offers her virginity to him. The child stumbles across them and prevents the bishop's son from taking the daughter's virginity by using his power to urge a sacred bull to gore the bishop's son. He warns the daughter not to kill the bull, as even he will not be able to protect her from the consequences. The daughter kills the bull, and the townspeople discover her. Sensing opportunity, the bishop says she is unfit to be the child's mother and takes custody of him. The bishop auctions off the child's fluid, with many suspecting he is being tortured to produce holy tears and blood, which sell at high prices. At night, the daughter sneaks into the child's room and suffocates him for abandoning her. The bishop orders her executed. However, the laws of the town expressly forbid the execution of a virgin. To circumvent this, Medici makes a suggestion to the bishop that the daughter be raped. The bishop dispenses holy pardons to members of the militia, allowing them to rape the daughter. The scene is to take place in a curtained-off canopy bed, behind which the actress playing the daughter acts out screams. However, the actors in the scene actually rape her, while Medici and the court stationed outside gleefully count off the rapists. After she is raped by 208 men, she is sentenced to execution, only for it to be discovered that she is already dead from the trauma. The townspeople gather to bury the body of the child. Fearful to be without his powers, they begin to gently strip his relics and eventually viciously dismember him, hoping that his body will bring them good fortune. Famine falls once again onto the city of Macon. The cast members take a bow, and the rest of the court turns around and bows to the camera, acknowledging that they too are performers. Okay, so let's see what's going on right now in the mainstream media. So we'll start off with, I'm just going to go straight to the Daily Mail to be, well, we'll have a look at Associated Press, shall we? Let's do Reuters. We did Associated Press on Monday. See if I can get something out to you before we get some pop-up obscuring the screen. So it's taking its time, a little blue dots going round in circles, verifying my device. Trump reports over $1.4 billion in income from crypto ventures. So there you go. Being the president of the United States is often, obviously, quite a profitable experience. And I thought that these are, is it senators or congress people that they're supposed to get, I think, about $150,000 a year, but seem to be worth millions when they leave for some strange reason. Isn't that odd? Okay, let's go to the Daily Mail, see what's going on over there. Someone was attacked by an alligator. My heart goes out to her friends and family. She was sadly killed. And then, below that, the second top headline, how man of the people Burnham used £16,000 of taxpayers' cash to help buy himself a new London flat. Now again, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I can't say why the canary.co were debanked, but I can say that the flavour I'm getting from the media, particularly the Daily Mail, is that Andy Burnham is far left, but far left is, from something like, say, the Canaries' point of view, I think that they're supposed to be talking about things like endorsing migration and endorsing certain lifestyle choices, things like that. But there are certain things you're not supposed to talk about that was taken the lead in the mainstream media, and certain, that's my opinion, I might be wrong. And so there's an Overton window, and there are certain things that they put outside that Overton window, things that they don't want discussed, things that no party can talk about, or if they do, they might find themselves prescribed. And that is the post-truth world promised to us by the Bilderberg Group that I mentioned on Monday, that we seem to be living here in the UK today. Okay, so let's go over to the BBC website, bbc.co.uk/news, and have a look at their top 10 stories at the present moment. Number 10, Romesh Ranganathan gutted over bakery closure. Number 9, a trip to India left me with 38 parasites in my brain. Number 8, Chris Mason, Starmer's defence plan leaves crunching trade-offs for Burnham to confront. Number 7, women with PMOS should have yearly health checks, says health watchdog. Number 6, girl reveals rape trauma ahead of sentence review. Number 5, defence black hole and Starmer's gift to Burnham. Number 4, plea for households to read energy meter as prices rise. Number 3, why Gen Z are planning for life without a state pension. Number 2, Trump made more than $1 billion from crypto in first year back in office. And number 1, woman raped by Superdry co-founder tells BBC she was working for him at the time. I think that's our jaunt around the so-called mainstream media done, but as we've noticed of late, there seems to be somewhat of a fusion between the mainstream and the alternative or independent media, whatever you want to call it, in recent times. So let's see if we can see any crossover here. Let's go over to rents.com, see what's going on Jeff's website. So scroll down to headline news stories, updated 24/7. Top story, Trump's outrageous military-industrial complex merger with Israel closer to becoming reality. That takes you to a website called VigilantFox.com, which I've not heard of before, I'm embarrassed to say. US Supreme Court vastly expands Trump's presidential power. Then we've got Why War with Russia is Unavoidable. That's by my old friend Michael Walsh. His website is now michaelwalshwriter.com. So please go over there and have a look at what Mike has been writing recently. He continues, obviously, to be putting articles out there. We did over 100 shows, I believe, together. And he is on, I think, once a month with Jeff Rentz now, which is always worth listening to. And something, if you don't find on Jeff's website, you tend to find linked to on earthnewspaper.com, Mark R. Else's website, which we'll be going to in a moment. Okay, let's go over to howtotheradioshow.com. And the top headline, I doubt it's been updated since, because where Hal is going to be, 4:30 in the morning at the moment. Extreme heat warnings arrive, New York City, New Jersey. So, my heart goes out to you over in the United States that have got, get this, a massive heat dome. Now, until last week when we had our heat wave, I'd never heard of the term heat dome. Okay, so never heard of the term heat dome. And suddenly we've got a heat dome in the UK and across Europe. And now we've got a heat dome over in the United States. Sounds like new terminology they're introducing to us. Or is it something that they're labelling, the term they're giving to us that's based upon things like HAARP technology we've heard about for years that can control the weather? Again, the people in charge don't seem to be wanting to make you as comfortable as possible. There was a time when I was growing up, I understood that you'd have two political parties and they present a manifesto saying what they're going to do for you for the next 4 years, and the one that was most popular, they'd be the ones elected, and that's what they do. That was how I was taught. But it seems to me that the powers that should not be, as the legendary Rick Adams used to call them, who does the voiceover for the opening to this show, they seem to be competing with each other around the world as to how can make life most unpleasant for their citizens. When you look at all the other things going on in countries around the world, historically Western countries, you have to ask yourself, are your lives better today than they were last year or the year before? Because I see a constant decline in the quality of life. Okay, let's go over to earthnewspaper.com. So this is Mark R. Else's website, and that is become more stable of late, which is good. I know Mark was under attack over there. There's a variety of links here to videos and articles. This is kind of where I would go to if I want to listen to more shows, because he tends to put more shows up than articles, if you see what I mean, whereas Jeff Rentz's website tends to go more for articles. So I find going to both of them on a daily basis, they, you know, kind of both offer slightly different things, which is of use to me. So that being said, let's wrap the show up with the Before It's News Top 10. I'm pleased to say we're still just 10 seconds short of the half hour mark, which is how long I like these shows to last. So let's go over to beforeitsnews.com, and here is the Before It's News Top 10, just loading up for us. So number 10, 37 people viewing, went up 4 days ago. Tucker Carlson, this world is not run by humans. Trump has supernatural powers. Jack Neal podcast. I think that was in our top 10 on Monday, wasn't it? And I questioned it then, and I question it now. I'm not sure Tucker Carlson would be saying something like that, but there you go. Number 9, went up a day ago, 45 people viewing. Darker than Satan, demonologist on what demons actually are, Nathan Gillis video. Number 8, went up 12 hours ago, 46 people viewing. Wano Savin, Big Intel 63026, CIC Trump and the National Emergency. Number 7, went up 17 hours ago, 46 people viewing. The three ingredient Amish ferment, it's, I don't know how to pronounce it, that replaces 30 supplements. Big Pharma wants this hidden video. Number 6, went up 12 hours ago, 54 people viewing. Josh Reed, Revival of America, 63026. This is what's happening. Number 5, went up 15 hours ago, 54 people viewing. And we know, 63026, Patriots. A nation built on courage, remain brave, communism safe act. Number 4, went up 3 hours ago, 64 people viewing. Byington bombshell report. Satanic mind circle, child sacrifice, cult headquartered at Vatican. Number 3, went up 12 hours ago, 75 people viewing. And there's the Before It's News pop-up that I have no intention of subscribing to. I'll start again. Number 3, went up 12 hours ago, 75 people viewing. David Nino, Rodriguez and Michael Jaco. Major intel drop, 6:30:26. Trump just did the impossible. Number 2, went up 6 hours ago, 114 people viewing. New X22 report, our founders did not go directly at the enemy. Neither is Trump, drain the swamp. And number 1, Judy Byington, well, went up 6 hours ago, 219 people viewing. Judy Byington, Wano Savin and Ricardo Bossi, 7:1:26, Trump military operation, Obama and Democratic Party. Okay, so the plan is to be running Bible readings tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Parables of Jesus on Monday, another Bible reading on Parables of Jesus on Sunday, another Bible reading on Monday, and then Peter coming back for a new show on Tuesday, and then I'm talking to you happening on Wednesday. But that is the plan, and plans can be subject to change. And if I do come back earlier, then please check this website. You can subscribe. I don't tend to subscribe to websites. I just check them on a daily basis and leave them at that. A little tip is it's only happened once where I put up a Bible reading and did a I'm Talking to You show on the same day. That was a couple of weeks ago when I did that on a Saturday, but I've never put two shows up on the same day again. I don't intend to. It would have to be something really important to do that. So if you go onto the website and you see something has already been published on that day, generally, more often than not, it is a reading from the proper name version of the King James Bible. You just need to look at the most recent post and the date underneath. And if it is the day that you're looking at it, you should not expect anything else until the following day. So you don't need to visit back for new content until then. A little tip for you that I only broke once a couple of weeks ago. Okay, let's play the closing music. I want to thank all of you for joining me on today's I'm Talking to You show, episode 268. The baby of Macron. I wish you all a wonderful week. I look forward to coming back with you again next week. And until then, folks, have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening, and bye for now.